All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NFL podcast. It's Tuesday. It's November 27th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
half of James Davis.
Oh, he's so sick, buddy. But guess what? Out of the locker room, on one foot, he's going to come in and do the podcast. We're going to be all good. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR.com for short. Head on over to DFSR.com/deals to get your the podcast listener, a special deal on our premium subscription package. It's free for 7 days and then just $24.95 a month after that. It covers you for optimal lineups for NFL, NBA, premium articles, premium chat, all under one subscription package. No better deal in the business. Go over and check it out. You sign up for free, you go and check, go into chat and say, how's this working out for everybody? Everyone will give you your honest opinion, which is going to be pretty much all positives across the board, and we think you'll be with us for the long haul. So DFSR.com/deals. Gets you started. Very interesting week in football. I got a lot of things to bring up here. I'm trying to decide. I have one super positive thing to bring up and two super negative things to bring up and a bunch of other stuff in between. Which one do you want to start with first, the positive or the negative?
Let's start with the positive, dude.
Okay, so Christian McCaffrey was a guy that I feel really good about because he was a guy when Funchess is ruled out, we were kind of looking at where to reapportion the target share, and some went to DJ Moore. And the more I looked at it, I was like, I just don't think I can give Olsen a big bump. And I basically gave McCaffrey the bump throughout, especially in the targets. And oh boy, did that work out. So I'm going to pat myself on the back for that one. I'm feeling very good. He was pretty low owned, all things considered. And he went completely and utterly off in that game. I had 11 targets, 7 to 20. I can't remember the number because I'm too excited about it.
It was 11 catches for 112 and a touch. 125 yards on the ground and a touch. Just a good running back, good wide receiver on the same day.
Yeah, exactly. I already kind of started looking at him for cash games. Is he a guy that we've kind of dreamed of him to start the season, very high on him to start the year, thinking he was going to be sort of like the every down back guy? That's basically happened. Where do you put him after this performance in the elite touch group? They have a great matchup this week against the Bucks. Where does he rank in terms of, like, tiers? Is he in that same tier of, like, Gurley and Hunt and, I was going to say James Conner, and that, speaking of the negative thing, we'll get to that in a second. Zeke Elliott, is he in that group, right, or do you still have him maybe a tick below?
No, I think he's probably in that group. You know, I don't want to overreact because there were so many big names that were either off or playing on Thursday, and, you know, I kind of have this, I don't want to run into a recency bias issue here, but, I mean, you have to love the 28 overall touches. That was, I think, second behind just Nick Chubb on the main slate and Ezekiel Elliott overall. So just an excellent week in terms of the overall usage. And I think going forward, you know, just these running backs, I mean, Saquon Barkley's this way too. These running backs that can just get you up in the high single digit, low double digit targets are going to have a floor that doesn't look like the floor of, you know, someone like James Conner, who, if the game script's going away from him, he just might not be involved.
Yeah, so if you look right now at carries plus targets on the season, McCaffrey sits fifth overall. Is Elliott, Gurley, Barkley, Connor still there somehow? And then McCaffrey. And then there's actually a pretty big drop-off after that. Like, I would call that almost the end of that tier, although it's interesting because the next guy is Gordon. He's hurt. David Johnson, his team stinks. Leonard Fournette suspended. Kamara is in a timeshare. Mixon's team's terrible. And then you get all the way down to Kareem Hunt. So Kareem Hunt sitting much lower on this overall usage chart than I would have thought, but I think McCaffrey, I still kind of would probably put Hunt in that group, but I'm not sure if that's warranted at this point. I mean, we can talk about that. I don't know, maybe that's a cash game, more of a cash game talk, because this is a recap podcast and the Hunt didn't play, so I guess maybe I'll table that one. But Kareem Hunt, I think, makes for an interesting case about where he stands with this group. But I think McCaffrey is at least in that tier. Maybe he's still sitting at the bottom of it, but I think that those five guys kind of fall in there. Now, James Conner, we talked about, he was the negative piece. I mean, we started Connor and Brown in cash games, and if you told me the Steelers were going to pile up like 500 yards and those guys were going to combine for like 80 of them or something like that, or maybe 100, I can't remember,
it was like
the total number.
Yeah.
I mean, the total number was way lower than you would have thought. But what do we do with Connor? Because now, I'm not sure how many weeks we can say, I think Connor's the plan, but the game script got away from him. I mean, this is like 4 or 5 weeks this season we've said this about him. It's like, well, he's still there with the snaps and everything. But I mean, how many games are we just going to have where the Steelers game script just gets away from them? Are they just the kind of team that's so sloppy that they can get down? And this is clearly what happened against Pittsburgh. They throw interceptions in the end zone. You sent me the tilt text of all time as I was driving home at the end of that Pittsburgh game, which was awesome. I almost got in an accident.
I was tilting in advance. As soon as they got to the 3-yard line and we had both Connor and Brown, and I was like sitting right on the bubble in these two FanDuel double ups, the big double ups, I said, I was just like, there's no way. There's no way Connor Brown has any piece of this, even though like, theoretically they should have one of those two guys who get a touchdown like 6 out of 10 times there or something like that. But no, I knew it from a mile away that it wasn't going to happen.
Yep. So he throws the pick. It was just I'm gonna frame the text thread because it was just like a one sided conversation about what was happening.
Right. I forgot you were driving.
A one sided conversation about what was happening in the pitch. I was actually following. I was kind of following along with it as we were very close to home at that point. So I thought I was gonna make it. But yeah, one sided conversation. So I guess my question remains about Connor is like, what is the fair usage for this guy? Because on the season, he clearly is among that group, but we've seen a lot of games now where it just kind of doesn't happen for him on the carries or maybe the targets. And I'm not sure how much of this overall season usage is built on some huge games earlier in the season. And if the numbers are going to continue to fall, or do you think that again, we can, with the small sample size of football, we can keep saying like, this was just a little bit of run bad, and this is still the plan. Like, this is the guy that I'm most torn about going forward.
Yeah, it's weird because he was actually like pretty good when he touched the ball last week. 53 yards on 13 carries is respectable. 42 receiving yards on 4 targets is good. So I don't really totally know, but he looks more, especially given that there are these other guys that just seem game script independent. I'd rather not play him because, I mean, you have 3 weeks in a row now where sure looked pretty dependent on the game script to get his, and a few games early in the season too, you know. Basically, we're just now really holding on to that 4-game stretch in October, you know, because the first 4 games to start the season, he went 36 touches, and then to 13, up to 20, down to 12. So it looks like it can come and go with Connor, unfortunately, and, you know, that's just going to put him a tier below in my rankings.
Yeah, and we're not going to have to make the decision on the main slate this week because they play the Chargers on the Sunday night game. So it's just like not going to matter, but or at least not going to matter for that. But I think it is instructive to try to figure out where these guys sort of land, because like you said, the 4-game stretch is completely elite, but it's so elite that it maybe bumps up the season long numbers and doesn't paint as clear a picture of what the Steelers are going to be able to do in terms of consistency on offense. Because I think ultimately that's their biggest problem, is the consistency on offense. This is the team that has a ton of sloppy red zone interceptions, and then has like a 97-yard touchdown pass to Juju. Like, this is like, they're just like, seem like at this point, like the ultimate boom or bust. Big Ben seems like this as well. And when you're just maybe a boom or bust team, I don't know. That maybe sounds a little too cliche also. So I don't know. Connor's the one guy when I stared at and trying to figure out what the usage was going to be going forward, he was definitely the hardest one, I felt, to kind of sure. just sort of pinpoint. The other guy, you know, I'm interested in your thoughts. Now, this game is also not on the main slate for this week, but I think it's worth probably mentioning here, is that Melvin Gordon, the Chargers. So the Chargers don't want Melvin Gordon to play. He talks them into playing because they think he's hurt. They want to keep him out for maintenance. He talks them into playing. Then they didn't want him to play so bad that they have him playing meaningless snaps at the end of the game, and he gets hurt and has an MCL injury, is now out for multiple weeks. I would say bad job on the Chargers all around. Where do we want to put Austin Ekeler going forward? He seemed like, you know, 3 weeks ago I would have said if Gordon was out, Ekeler was clearly the guy. But then they brought in Justin Jackson for 13 snaps last week, and he actually got more carries than Ekeler, but it was kind of garbage time. What do we want to do? Because Ekeler seems like a guy that I'd obviously be in line for huge amounts of volume. And the fact that Justin Jackson was just kind of around has me a little bit worried. What's your thoughts here on the Chargers running back situation?
No, I'm going to play Ekeler, I think. I think my suspicion would be, given that it was garbage time, that's a lot of the reason you didn't see more Ekeler. He still had 11 targets in that game. He had 10 catches. He was great on this price point. He scored a touchdown. I think that you'll see Ekeler be the primary guy. And I think for this week, more importantly, he's still priced affordably enough where you can take some lumps if it doesn't work out perfectly. Like, if you're really going to be targeted that often and you're going to gobble up all those Melvin Gordon targets out of the backfield, which is, you know, where a ton of Melvin Gordon's value comes from, I think you could still justify playing him at a very, very affordable price tag.
I think Ekeler is a reason to play the Thursday through Monday slates that are currently available, just because he is such a good value that I usually kind of may sometimes avoid those long weekend slates, just because they can get a little
stuff can come up. It's weird.
Yeah, it's a little burdensome to manage and whatnot, especially too if the Thursday game doesn't look all that juicy. It's not something that I'm usually just kind of drawn to. Ekeler, though, does strike me as the fact that he's not coming on any of these other larger slates and will be heavy chalk on the smaller ones. I do think there's an advantage to be had if you start the Thursday slate, because I agree with you. I think he is clearly going to be the guy. He's still very cheap, less than 5,400 on FanDuel, and the 11 targets more than anything. Yeah, he's 5,400 on DraftKings as well. The 11 targets more than anything mean that I think the floor should be high there, especially if the game can stay high scoring against Pittsburgh. Let's go through some of the quarterback play. Not a ton of huge performances. We mentioned the Big Ben yards thing, 462 yards, only one touchdown, tough to do. 56 pass attempts. He's had a lot of these this season. But after that, I wasn't some of these other quarterback play games didn't really stand out. Not a ton of big games here. Anything that you want to point to from week 12?
Well, I think it's worth bringing up Lamar Jackson. People were, you know, he was highly owned and he was most of what we hoped he would be, even though it was pretty sloppy and kind of slow to get there. He winds up with only 11 carries, which I think is the most interesting thing. I really thought that, you know, the high teen carries would be the plan for him. He was very bad at passing the ball. He had two picks on 25 attempts, completed just 14 of those passes. So I think I'm going to call myself lucky on getting Lamar Jackson last week and probably hope to move on from playing him in the future. That being said, I was hoping for your take because he's basically the same price, arguably an even better matchup against Atlanta this week. Do you think people go back to the Lamar Jackson well?
Okay, so the reason to be discouraged about Lamar Jackson is that the Ravens came out that game against the Raiders and seemed to want to turn him into a quarterback very different than the reason they were successful in the first time he was there. They barely ran the ball with him. They ran the ball some like three times total, and a lot of those were just not designed runs. They were scramble plays in the first half. Up until the last drive. Then the last drive of the first half, they go back to the run pass option and basically just like march down the field. And then at halftime, it's like they said, oh, maybe we should have done that from the beginning. And then they came out the second half and basically just ran the ball the entire time. So almost all those carries came in the second half. So it's really a question of what you think the plan is, because if they're committed to the original plan, which was the 20 plus carries, and if the second half of the game is any signal to what they plan to do for going forward, then I think you can be very bullish on the carries. And it scares me that they just tried to change him week over, or they tried to not him. They tried to change the scheme week over week, and it took falling behind to the Raiders to like figure out that it wasn't going to work. So I think that's where I'm sort of torn. Like I actually do think 11 carries is going to be the basement here against the Falcons. I think that 15 to 20 is probably more realistic if they come out doing that to start. And it just worries me that they got away from the plan so early. So I don't know. With that in mind, I mean, would you be more encouraged or less encouraged after? Because I watched a decent amount of this game, and that was really exactly what happened. They just, in the second half, they went completely back to what worked. And that was when he basically piled on most of his points.
Yeah, I mean, I would be encouraged about that for sure. There's just weirdness out of their camp too. Like, people are talking about potentially him and Flacco splitting snaps in the future. I think Flacco could theoretically even start playing now, but they just kind of like the way Jackson looked. So, I don't know. It's a weird situation. I'll keep an eye on it, but certainly at least worth considering. I think as soon as he gets in a bad matchup, I'll probably be kind of off it. But I think in the meantime, yeah, Atlanta's just such a good matchup that you can probably get away with it. What about Gus Edwards? I mean, this guy comes out, he was relative chalk. He only scored 11.8 fantasy points, but he got 23 carries for 118 yards. Are we believing in this guy now? It's back-to-back games with 100-plus yards.
He was another one that saw like 65% of his carries in the second half. The explanation on Jackson is basically you can translate it right to Edwards too. I think that it just completely matters about what they plan to do in the offensive end, and if they're committed to this, and I think you could see 25 carries again. It helped him that Alex Collins was out. I don't know if that was part of the reason they switched. It was just so weird. It was the watching that game was so weird. I was like basically flabbergasted, like, because if you watch Lamar Jackson throw, I'm not an X's and O's. Excuse me, I'm not like an X's and O's or like or just like a makeup guy in terms of like, oh, this guy's got a great arm angle and
throwing
like
mechanics.
Like, I'm not pretending to do that. And you can also kind of tell that Lamar Jackson like really doesn't throw all that hard, right? Like, having watched football for a few seasons to know, hey, this guy's just not throwing with the same zip as other NFL quarterbacks. So it was just so flabbergasting. So I guess the Edwards thing really for me falls under the same heading as where we stand with Jackson in terms of what is going to be the plan. It does help that they are playing an Atlanta team that's just very bad on defense. It doesn't help that Atlanta has some offense and they could fall down early. So this will be one that I kind of mull over the course of the week. What are your thoughts on Jameis? Jameis came in this week, completed 76% of his passes, 312 yards, two touchdowns against San Francisco. Looked for all the world about like what Tampa Bay quarterbacks do on average. Just they just seem to end up swapping each other all around from week to week. But on average, this is like kind of what you can come to expect from a Tampa Bay quarterback once you pile the whole game together. Is he a guy that is still the cash game viable going forward? Like, is he good enough? He did also run the ball for 24 yards. Is he good enough? Like, is the floor there that we might still be buying a little bit low on Jameis?
I think so. I think he's very affordable at 7,500 going forward this week into FanDuel. I think that one good week means it's a lot less likely he'll get benched in the middle of a bad week here. So right. Even though it's kind of insane to be thinking about it that way, I definitely think you can run him back out there. I think he'll be relatively highly owned. I can't remember what his exact ownership was, but it was already in like the 20% sort of range. And San Francisco, arguably a better matchup than Carolina, but still totally playable here.
And then Nick Mullins had pretty high ownership, which I was surprised about going for. We were all in on Lamar Jackson last week, and you know, when I saw Mullins' ownership, I thought, I mean, it made sense to me. It made sense from a matchup standpoint. In that,
from
Tampa
what
Bay,
percentage of people just really suck at DFS standpoint?
Oh, buddy. So I don't want to turn all the people that started Mullins. I could have made the case for it. It's not a guy that I really wanted to play myself, but when you're playing Tampa Bay, is so bad on defense, especially against the pass, that really almost anybody playing against them in where Mullins was priced is probably worth a look. Now, he ended up completely underperforming. Was that a case of people maybe making too much about a matchup but not enough about pedigree? Because again, this was a guy who was a complete and utter nobody as of 3 weeks ago, and then now is, you know, the starting, and just happens to now be the starting quarterback for the 49ers. They were also very short. They had no Marquise Goodwin, no Pierre Garçon. What are your thoughts on situations like that? When you saw Mullins, I guess we don't need to debate whether Mullins is a play going forward, but when you see ownership like that, were you instantly like, I kind of said, uh-oh, and then, but is that your reaction, or are you thinking, oh, these people just made a mistake here?
I was happy because I think it's more a case of punting away from a good position, and that's something I don't always agree with. And in this case, the punt, like, it's one thing on FanDuel if you could get, or I'm sorry, in basketball, if you were could get Mullins for like 3,500 and, you know, Lamar Jackson was 7,500, right? Excuse me. You would take Mullins in that case. But in this case, you're getting him for, it was like a $1,400 discount. It was a good matchup, but they just got no weapons there. And who was he was supposed to pass to? He's like, you know, CJ Bitard had already been bad for multiple weeks based on, you know, playing with this same group. And presumably they thought Bitard was better, and Mullins hasn't really shown us anything that Bitard hasn't. So I just didn't get it. I get why people would take the chance, and certainly like for big tournament purposes, I sort of get it, or a really small slate or something like that. But on a big slate with like multiple really, really good options like Jackson and Jameis and even Andrew Luck, like I just didn't understand it. So
I will say the guy, I had the same feeling. I was not all that worried. I was not, I mean, I said, ugh, but the one I actually did a more of a, uh-oh kind of feeling toward was Breida. Breida was a guy we did consider, especially when Alfred Morris was a healthy scratch. That was a sign and a signal that Breida was basically going to be the man. Now, that's funny because that seemed for all the world like it was going to be the case, and still he only outsnapped Jeffrey Wilson 31-25 in that game. Now, Breida, although when I did see Breida's ownership, I thought this could be a place, this could be end up being a smash pop for him, and it could be a place where we really fall behind. Probably got lucky that he didn't score a touchdown, but had Morris didn't start, Wilson did, is that just another signal that like it's not the plan to just give one guy in this offense 20 carries a game? Like when it's just a random guy kind of off the street playing here, or is Breida, or do you think that Breida, maybe in a slightly better game script, Breida could have like touched 20 carries?
Well, yeah, that is an interesting question, because I will say that the thing you just mentioned, the part where one guy goes down and the running back by committee's teams don't just make a solo back the only guy, that's something we've really learned a lot about this year, where some teams just have a plan, like the Steelers, to have one running back, and some teams, like the Falcons, just have a plan to have two. You know, and that's just what they're going to do. And you don't want to get carried away projecting huge increases. I don't think we know enough about San Francisco so far. I think the fact that Breida had 21 total looks in the Giants game probably indicates that we could see 20 plus carries from him or 20 plus touches in games that stay closer. Going into Seattle, I'm not sure that's exactly the spot you want to do it, but I definitely think he's worth keeping an eye on going forward, because he was also just excellent on a per-touch basis, where, of course, Mullins was pretty bad. So, yeah, I'm fairly high on Breida going forward.
And then one more quarterback I wanted to mention. I don't know if you have anyone else, but it'd be crazy. Marcus Mariota last night went 22 for 23 passing for 303 yards and two touchdowns. and they lost by 17 points. They lost 34 to 17.
He almost had the perfect game, dude.
That's what I mean. It was crazy. He was perfect at halftime. And he looked for all the world like an accurate, competent passer. They put up a lot of yards, and they still couldn't even come close to winning. It's one of the craziest efficiency lines you'll ever see for a team that didn't even come close to winning, I think. Like I
wonder why they didn't come close to winning when they couldn't get their guy with 95% completion percentage more than 23 pass attempts. You know?
Okay, this leads me into running backs here, because I'm going to ask a question about Deion Lewis and Derrick Henry. So Deion Lewis is a guy who's seen heavy ownership the last couple of weeks. They did not get there this week because of just the Monday night game. So you kind of can wipe it off the main slate. Lewis was a guy who carried the ball, seemed like he was going to sort of be their bell cowish running back for a couple weeks span, and then they've reverted back the other way. Is he a guy that we could be buying low on? Like, I actually did a brief write-up on him for Cash Game Articles. I actually think he's still in consideration, but is it just been too many weeks of the Deion Lewis just not really getting there, or is he a candidate for a bounce-back week?
Yeah, he's a candidate. You know, he still had 15 total, or 14 total looks last week. Team is bad. Offense is bad. It's very clear that there are many game scripts on this bad team, which will see him getting fewer than 15 touches. And he's also really cheap. So I think he's the type of guy you're going to look at the line. You're going to see, you know, does Vegas think the Titans are going to be involved in a close game? Well, especially, are they going to be up? Because they have the Jets this week.
9-point favorite. 9-point favorite at home this week.
I think 9-point favorite, I think you play him as a 9-point favorite.
Yep, that's kind of where I ended up landing on him, because I want to this year I think we've done also a better job of recognizing sort of small size variance on guys who can, and not completely and totally utterly overreacting to the short term results, because teams have shown that they will just go back to things that have worked earlier in the right game, and I think Lewis sort of checks that box for me going into this week. And I'm prepared. I'm obviously just prepared to like just be wrong about that. But he's maybe coming cheaper than for that's worth.
It's I don't know. I'm looking more closely here. Derrick Henry and Corey Davis had a combined 9 carries to Lewis's 7. Granted, the game was like utterly out of hand by halftime, and not clear to me they were trying to save Lewis. And also, I mean, Lewis has had pretty good volume in the last 4 weeks, but the guy has been awful on a per touch basis. Like. So 3.3 yards per carry against Dallas, 2.9 against New England, 2.4 against Indy, 1.1 against Houston. So maybe not. I don't know. I'm going back and forth on it. That's one I need to dig deeper into.
Overall, pretty low. Not a ton of crazy running back performances this week outside of the McCaffrey one where he scored 36 fantasy points. But guys like Barkley, Chubb, Fournette looks like he's going to be suspended. But some of these other names, like Garrett Blunt, Kenyon Drake, Sony Michel, these aren't guys that I'm necessarily targeting going forward. Anything stand out to you else in the running back game this week?
Yeah, Chubb. He was like 25% owned in cash games at a mid-7s price, and I thought that was high, and I was wrong. He was great, like in terms of just overall total production. You know, a lot of that came from turning 3 targets into 44 receiving yards and a touchdown, so you certainly got helped out a little bit there. He also punched in a touchdown on the ground, but one thing we're seeing with Cleveland going forward is, and this has been all year, they just really would prefer to run the ball. So anytime they can find any excuse to get the ball on the ground, they're going to do so. They walk into Houston, a team that just legit dumpstered another team, like in the Titans, that tried to have a similar plan. So who knows? Maybe next week isn't the Nick Chubb week, but it's still one to keep on your radar. I mean, I guess it's obvious at this point. I'm many weeks late on the Nick Chubb bandwagon, but that was a good call by you that I was not on top of.
If you look at his weeks, if you look at his touch, this is another guy that I kind of nodded to in cash games going into this week. If you look at his touches over the last 5 weeks, since he took over the starting job for Carlos Hyde, 20, 21, 23, 23, 31. But it's worth noting in those games, the Browns are 2-3 in those games. So it's not like they went on this crazy kind of like win streak and that's when he was touching the ball a lot. These are also games where they were losing. Now, we've seen what happens when they're winning. When they're winning, he touches the ball 31 times, right? So, if the floor is going to be 20 in games you're losing and the upside is going to be 30 in games where you're just kind of running downhill like they were last week, then he has as much upside as any running back really in the game. And he's another one where I'm kind of like, you know, do we put him in that elite class? Because on the per usage, I should have just re-queried it for like the last 5 weeks. And my guess is that he is right there with those other guys in terms of just touches per game. So just because like this ends up being the 31 puts him up to like an average of like 25 touches per game. And that is right around where those guys like Zeke and company are. So I think Chubb he gets a bad matchup this coming week against Houston, which is going to be a tough one. And I think that's maybe the only reason the multipliers on him get set a little low. They are underdogs against Houston going on the road. So that'll be one to keep an eye on too. Any other running backs? We'll touch on wide receivers, then we'll get out of here.
Yeah, Josh Adams was the big guy that I wanted to look at. You know, he wound up getting there. I mean, on $5,700 price tag, but it was very clear that he is the number one back there. 22 carries against Clements, 5 carries. So I think you're settling in for a legitimate number one back. Even if he didn't get any targets in the passing game, which you don't really love to see, he's still 6,100 on FanDuel, and I think still a value there too.
Yeah, so Adams, two things about him. One, he had a 60-yard touchdown run called back as a holding on the Eagles' first drive. Now, again, you can make a case like, okay, well, he only got there because of the holding, and you could also say maybe he didn't, and that's 12 points wiped off the board right there. And then he also got hurt. So he sat out two series because he hurt his shoulder, and he still was able to just completely dominate the touches for the Eagles running back situation. That was one we ended up playing him on DraftKings, and I was getting real worried after the third drive when he really hadn't played at all. But then they completely went to him in the second half. And that had been the word coming out of Philly early before the game started, was that the plan was to make him the every down back. The targets are going to be there. This is a guy who has caught the ball out of the backfield in other weeks that he's played, so I'm actually not so worried about that. It just ended up not being what they did this week. I'm with you, Adams. Probably not in that upper tier group that we mentioned before. And it's, again, for the main slate this week, not going to matter. They play the Monday night game. He'd be a guy that we'd definitely be considering at the Eagles' 6.5 point home favorites against the Redskins, but not going to be a main slate player. Let's switch over to wide receivers just to finish this thing off. Some of the usual suspects that we've seen in terms of targets this week, you know, Julio Jones, 14. Antonio Brown, 13. Juju, 17. Juju was a guy, too. He was a guy sniffing around our cash games, and very tough one to pull the trigger on going into the week. When you're sort of picking between him and Brown, I know they weren't the same price, but it was a swap going with another player that it didn't seem like it was all that big of a downgrade. And then Juju goes completely off. I mean, where do we set target share on guys like on the Steelers here? I still want to set Brown as the clear guy. He continues to have conversion issues. He did convert 9 for 13 this week for only 67 yards. But the Pittsburgh team is the one that I'm just the most confused by.
Yeah. I mean, Juju is weird. He had that one 97-yard touchdown or whatever. So that helped pad the stats, so to speak. Could have also inspired them to go to him a little more often. But we know that there are weeks where Juju will out-target Brown. We also know that Brown can still get 13 targets in weeks like that. So I think you could still consider him a relatively high floor guy. He did convert his first 8 targets into catches over the course of the game. And I don't know if you watched like any of these other ones, but like the interception, for instance, I think 2 interceptions were targeted for him, and both were like not even anywhere near his fault. So I'm not worried about Brown going forward. What I'm kind of like just generally concerned about on a wide receiver level as a whole is only 2 wide receivers this week, though. 2 had more than 20 fantasy points. That's crazy. It was just Juju and Amari. And the next one was like a Corey Davis on 4 targets. He was at 19.5. So are we early in the season? I wrote breathless takes about how it was like the death of the running back. Here we are late in the season and you can't find a 20-point wide receiver. Is this now officially a position where we just want to try to find mid-range value, or do we want to be dabbling on the high end here?
I think it's instructive to see how our cash games have sort of flowed over the last couple weeks. Now, some of it's been because of just the teams that we're playing. You know, we don't get KC and the Rams playing this last week, and some of these guys haven't been on the main slate. But over the last couple weeks, we've definitely deferred to just getting as many big money running backs in there. And the rest of the industry has too. That's just not like just an us thing. The rest of the industry has gone the same way, because I think it's pretty clear that while we did see huge target shares out of guys like Thielen early in the season, I mean, Brown still maintains a huge target share, and Thielen saw 9 targets last week too. I think that by and large, there is just on a week-to-week basis enough middle-tier wide receiver value play that you don't need to break the bank on the big guys. And I think we've just seen enough variable performance out of guys like Brown, guys like Thielen, and enough just big games out of guys like Corey Davis DJ Moore last week, and guys like this, Kenny Galladay in weeks past, where they just they haven't been so expensive that you can't just play them for having a high floor, if that makes sense. I think that's kind of where I end up, like, just a top-down level. That's sort of where I'm landing at wide receiver right now, because for most guys, our target shares have just gone nothing but down over the last, like, 5 weeks, right? Like, from peak from peak targets. Does that make sense? I think maybe, I don't know, I'm kind of stumbling around.
No, yeah, it does. And I mean, and even you, like, you've been insane at finding these gems. You played David Moore in cash games last week.
That was,
he was really low owned, and he wound up with 16 fantasy points.
That's the old, well, that's FanDuel's fault for setting a guy, a wide receiver with the same initials in the same game at the same price, like, in at the thing. So that's my bad. I'm
what percentage of people actually also made that mistake alongside you?
Just not many. Not many. Most people were smarter than
that. So is it really a FanDuel problem, or is it a Doug problem?
It's a Doug problem. I get so wrapped up in, like, you know, dealing with overall projections and just like user stuff and answering questions on Sunday that my lineups end up sort of becoming last
yeah,
line
same
of
here,
the things
here.
The last line of things that I'm worried about. But I did see the, I was like, man, D Morse super low owned. I was like, oh, god damn it, it's wrong guy. And then it catches, I was going crazy in our chat because I was like, wrong D Moore with the TD when he caught the 54 yard luck box bomb that kind of got me into cash games. Any other final thoughts here? We're gonna talk about Eric Ebron and the tight end situation on the cash game podcast, so I'm gonna kind of skip over that right now. Any other tight end thoughts? We saw big weeks out of guys like Ertz. Kittle got a lot of that. You know, let's save the tight end talk for the cash game, because I think we're gonna cover a lot of this, and we're gonna also cover some of the injury replacement news going forward. All right, we'll be back again for a cash game podcast later in the week, also game by game podcast breakdown going in on Friday. Buddy, I will talk to you later in the week. D Moore for all the money.
Peace.